ranked one of America's top research universities, the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee plays a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin. UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Meet the people behind the creativity and discoveries on UWM today. Here's the host, Tom Lujack, Vice Chancellor of University Relations.
This week, the House of Representatives voted to impeach President Donald Trump for the second time. The historic event followed the tragedy in the U.S. Capitol last week when groups of Trump supporters staged an insurrection, storming the symbol of American democracy in an unsuccessful attempt to stop Congress from certifying the election of Joe Biden as president. Today, thousands of National Guard troops are stationed in and around the Capitol, bracing themselves for potentially more violent demonstrations when Biden is inaugurated on Wednesday. On this edition of UWM Today, we're going to talk about the political impact these events are having on our country. My guest is Kathy Dolan, a distinguished professor of political science at UWM. Kathy's research has focused on electoral behavior, political participation, and women and politics. She is also co-editor of the American Journal of Political Science and is one of the leaders of the UWM faculty. Kathy, good to have you on today's program. Welcome.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
It is fair to say, don't you think, that the past week has been unlike any other in our nation's history?
Yes, I will say that we have had an extraordinary week with a series of unprecedented events that I think unfortunately signal to us that we are at the beginning of a process of some manner of disruption and evolution in our political system, not the end. What happened last Wednesday really, I don't think was the culmination of a series of forces. I think it was the beginning of a new phase.
And that's so discouraging to many of us who after the rioters were cleared out of the Capitol, thought, well, here's just a bad batch of people who were misguided and acted in a way that was amazingly unconscionable. But you're suggesting that that this may be just a symbol of more to come?
Well, I certainly can't predict events, but I think what the insurrection in the Capitol last Wednesday has shown us broadly is what many people have been talking about for quite a while now, which is a growing wave of violence and anti-government attitudes growing among a larger number of Americans than many people had acknowledged. So among the people who staged the insurrection last week, we have people of all walks of life who sit on the more conservative and perhaps Republican side of the spectrum. But this was not just one small group of people who shared common characteristics or common goals. This was a very diverse group of people who came together from all walks of life on from that particular ideological perspective, and who have developed a pretty significant communications system, media system, ideological system, and organizational structure that allowed them to mount the efforts they did last week.
Has that movement always been there, or did President Trump give license for it to come alive?
Well, there certainly has always been a far right in American politics, just like we can identify far right movements in most any system around the world. I mean, it's not unique to the United States. But the people who undertook the insurrection last week are the members of a far right conspiracy group that certainly has gained traction in the last 4 years, and certainly has inserted President Trump as a key figure in their ideology and in the story they tell. So people who keep track of far-right and terrorist groups in the United States, sort of domestic terrorist groups, would argue that there's a, you know, healthy and robust list of those groups and those actors in the United States. But we are certainly seeing more organization around a particular set of ideologies, a particular set of movements, and certainly President Trump as their messiah.
Well, and Trump himself invited these people to Washington. You know, in the last day or so, he came out with a message saying these aren't real Trump supporters. But in reality, for weeks after claiming that he won the election, he was saying, come to Washington. It's going to be wild.
Yes, that's exactly right. And that's part of the unprecedented nature of what we're experiencing right now, because we've not had a situation in which the president of the United States has been sending out a call for violence against our system or action against our system in the way that President Trump had. And, you know, yesterday during the impeachment, we saw people debating the words that he spoke before the rioters moved toward the Capitol last Wednesday. But I think focusing on what he said last week is much too narrow a lens. People need to think about the way he has talked about government and himself and his supporters as outsiders to the government structure during his 4 years in office, as well as what he has said since he lost the election and the work that he has done to delegitimize President-elect Biden's victory.
Now, there were thousands of people at the protest rally that started with the president away from the Capitol before they marched down and the riot broke out. But when you think about the rest of the country, there were 70 million people who voted for President Trump, and many of them still believe his claims that he won the election, even though his own Attorney General William Barr and the Justice Department declared they couldn't find any signs of widespread fraud. So why do you think so many of Trump's supporters believe him and not the investigators or the judges who've rejected his claims of voter fraud?
Well, I think there are a couple of important pieces here. One is that people who believe the sorts of things that President Trump has been selling really for 4 years, again, not just in the last couple months, they have a very extensive and well-developed media ecosystem in which they exist. And people like to think of, say, Fox News as emblematic of a media outlet in the United States that serves an ideological purpose and that very clearly manipulates the content of the stories they tell to serve a political goal. But Fox News is really just the tip of the iceberg. So we have the OAN network, we have all sorts of social media things. I mean, how many people knew what Parler was before, you know, the last week or so?
Or ever watched Newsmax.
Yeah, right,
which
exactly.
Has become the exactly. New darling, it seems.
Well, that's right, because Fox News is a little less ascendant, and now Newsmax and OAN are more ascendant. But in general, right, those people who are supporters of the president and who were supporters of these kinds of ideologies even before President Trump ran for office, they have an alternative reality. They have an alternative media structure that tells them what they believe and gives them the information that they believe. So, you know, all of this misinformation doesn't just come from one single source, right? If you look at Facebook, if you look at various social media platforms, if you look at these, you know, clearly official and robust media organizations, people who are open to these sorts of ideologies have many venues in which this information can be imparted to them and then reinforced almost endlessly. So I think that's one important piece of it. I think the other important piece is that part of the ideology is we, as the supporters of President Trump and these beliefs, are the outsiders to a corrupt system that seeks to destroy us. And so when somebody like former Attorney General Barr indicates that there is no evidence of support for ideas of fraud in the election, then that is our evidence that he has shifted away from us and that he is now the enemy. And if you think about the fact that a gallows was erected on the lawn of the Capitol and the chants were hang Pence, this group of people has turned on a dime on a man who has done nothing but support the president in his 4 years as vice president. So anybody who stands apart from the messiah is defined as the enemy immediately. So in the eyes of the people who stormed the Capitol last Wednesday, Mike Pence is as much of a traitor as is Nancy Pelosi.
You know, at the university, we talk every day about teaching critical thinking. And, you know, you teach and have taught students for many, many years here and in your previous post. I had the opportunity to be in the classroom for many years here at UWM as an instructor. And I recall with some pride talking about the facts in my field, media and marketing and advertising, and you in political science. There, it seems like for the time that I've been involved in education, we've been able to agree that there are a set of ideas that everybody can agree upon, that they've been tested, they've been proofed. But yet we saw in this last election, despite what the Justice Department and Attorney General Barr reported out, there still are millions of people who are saying, but that's not true. Does this all go back to, remember Kellyanne Conway, when Trump first began his presidency, she was talking about alternative facts. Mm. And has this ever happened before?
Well, yes. I mean, we are bearing the fruit right now of a, you know, decades-long sort of evolution away from, right, as you say, some idea of a shared reality of beliefs and a shared way of evaluating information and evidence. And so you can think about the anti-vaccine movement, right? I mean, we're talking about the anti-vaccine movement in the context of the COVID-19 situation, but anti-vaccination has been a robust ideology in the United States for decades. Or we can think about climate denial, right? I mean, we can think about all different sorts of issues on which there is debate about what information we use to evaluate situations, what information is valid. And we have as a people, you know, I only studied the United States, and I can only suspect that this happens in every country because human beings are human beings. But we have moved more and more into a world where we are comfortable saying that my opinion is just as valid as your opinion. And when I teach and when I talk with students, I mean, we know that everybody has a right to their beliefs, but they have a right to beliefs that they can support with evidence and reasoning. And that's the piece that's missing, right? I think we have done a lot of work to empower people to believe that the things that they hold dear are as important as anything else. And we've done less good work, whether it's through our K-12 education system, whether it's through the university education system, whether it's our always forgetting to acknowledge what a relatively small percentage of Americans have a college degree. We have not done as good a job as we could as a political and social nation to remind people and to help train people in the exercise of bringing evidence to the arguments they make.
So is it our job as educators to try to give greater authority to the facts, help people appreciate that there are some things that are true and some things that aren't, or are we all at the mercy of politicians who, in their leadership role, are proclaiming what is and what isn't a fact, this alternate reality that you discussed?
Well, you know, I think it's broader than the education system. Certainly the education system, you know, K-12, and higher education has and has always had a responsibility to help teach people and educate people how to use evidence, how to do critical thinking, how to identify, valid news sources from invalid news sources. But it's broader than that, I think, because, again, the media landscape has changed so much over the course of my lifetime and certainly your lifetime. And so if we look back to the media landscape, say, in the 60s when I was a child, as opposed to today, there are, you know, different rules of engagement. There are different norms and different ways in which the media have proliferated. There are different rules, right? I mean, we seem to think that we're going to have this coming conversation about big tech and about social media and how it can operate in our society. And during the election, when Facebook, you know, made the decision to not run political ads for the last month of the election because they knew the degree to which misinformation could proliferate. So I think, you know, the media environment, not to blame them exclusively, but I think that is also an important piece. I do think we have seen a degradation in the way that our politicians at many levels work as well. As some politicians see that a particular approach to gaining supporters is successful for others, they adopt it. I mean, you know, if you think about some of the U.S. senators who voted against the certification of President-elect Biden's Electoral College victory last week, you know, in their hearts, those people with functioning brainstems understand that there is no fraud in the election. But they simultaneously know that continuing to argue that there were concerns, and I'm making bunny ears that your listeners can't see, that that will offer them a payoff politically. So as the cynical nature of the way some politicians behave has evolved and changed as well. And you know, somebody like Ted Cruz or Josh Hawley, they're not the first people to ever behave that way. But we've really had a critical mass of, you know, a change in the way politicians approach the job of dealing with supporters and bringing truth to the public. So I think our education system, you know, has work to do. I think our political system, our media system, families, you know, I mean, families have to socialize kids to think about, you know, public affairs and being engaged, right? Because we have lots and lots of people who aren't paying attention and don't realize yet that the president was impeached for the second time yesterday. You know, I think those of us who are marinated in these issues all the time because of what we do and where we work, you know, forget that people are out there trying to survive COVID, trying to keep their jobs, trying to keep their kids educated, trying to get things done. And sometimes being, you know, a critical consumer of politics is not at the top of their list. But to be a healthy civic society, we have to sort of return that priority to people's lives.
You're listening to UWM Today here on WUWM. Good to have you with us this week. I'm Tom Lujack, and joining us in our remote studios is Kathy Dolan, a distinguished professor of political science at UWM. Kathy's research has focused on electoral behavior and participation in the political system, as well as looking at women and their role in politics. We're talking about the fallout from last week's riot at the Capitol and what is in store for us going ahead. The day that he was impeached, Kathy, President Trump released a statement saying he was opposed to violence in the Capitol. He asked for calm. Do you think that will have any impact on what happens between now and the inauguration?
No. I mean, if we're to believe the FBI reports. And again, I think, you know, this notion of as a society, we undersold the danger that was coming. I think that's been made very clear in recent days. I mean, we now know that the FBI was reporting before January 6th that there were concerns about violence. we are seeing some decisions that were made, whether it was in the Department of Defense, National Guard, you know, that again seemed to undersell the seriousness of what could have happened. And the FBI is reporting to all 50 state capitals that they should prepare for violence between now and January 20th. And the Capitol, the U.S. Capitol, is clearly expecting more, right? I mean, if you've seen all the pictures of the guards people all over, you know, I mean, there must have been 2,000 guards people sleeping in the Capitol yesterday because they just arrived and there are no barracks ready. And if you think about the changes that we're already hearing to President-elect Biden's inauguration, right? He will no longer take the Amtrak train from Delaware to the Capitol because of the security nightmare that that presents. They are committed at this point to doing a public swearing in on the west front of the Capitol. But we've got 6 days, you know, so who knows? the mayor of D.C., Muriel Bowser, has worked hard already in the last week to push people away from coming to the district for the inauguration because there are what, you know, the FBI seems to think are legitimate concerns.
What about the future of the Republican Party after Trump is out of office? Biden is sworn in a few days, and they hit reset in the Congress. The Democrats will control both the House and the Senate, along with the executive branch. What do you imagine happening for the next 2 years before the next round of congressional elections? Are all of the 10 Republicans who voted in favor of impeaching Trump in the House yesterday, are they all going to be primaried? Are we going to see a civil war in the party of Lincoln?
You know, that is an excellent set of questions, and we can never know the future, but I think it's particularly challenging to figure out what's going to happen right now. And I say that because of the dynamics that have unfolded in the last week. So as you say, 10 Republicans voted in the House of Representatives, voted in favor of President Trump's second impeachment yesterday. But if you are reading any of the interviews with members of the House, there are other members of the House of Representatives who supported the article of impeachment and who did not vote against it because they fear for their lives. The number of death threats that Republican members of the House are receiving, you know, under the direction that you will support the president or we will come get you, and what happened on Wednesday. I mean, there are members of the Republican Party who are in fear for their lives and the lives of their families. That is an extraordinary moment in American politics. And so the question is, how many people will continue down a path of supporting President Trump and his supporters? How many people will feel comfortable thinking that the president, will be irrelevant at some point soon? And how does the party move forward? My own pessimism, I tend to be somewhat pessimistic about things. My own pessimism is motivated by the fact that President Trump will not be president in a few days. But Marjorie Taylor Greene was just elected, and Laura Bernhardt from Colorado was just elected, and Josh Hawley has another 4 years on his term, and Ted Cruz will be in the Senate for a while. And Congress, members of Congress tend to serve for long periods of time. Yes, we have high profile circumstances, you know, where people are primaried or they're defeated in a general, the two senators in Georgia perhaps being our most recent example, but incumbents have a very high reelection rate in Congress as a rule. And so as people with President Trump's fervor and ideology are elected to office, they will remain and they will continue. Marjorie Taylor Greene announced this morning that she will file an article of impeachment against President Biden, on January 21st. So we are not going to see this chaos go away anytime soon. We are not going to see the Republican Party as one rise up and say, well, that fever dream has finally burst, because Ted Cruz knows, right? And Josh Hawley knows that somebody has got to be nominated as the Republican candidate for president in 2024. And until it's very clear, you know, what kind of person's going to get that nomination, they're going to play however they have to stay at the front of the line. And so I think, you know, the sort of leadership of the Republican Party embodied perhaps by people like Representative Liz Cheney and Senator Mitch McConnell, they have to make a decision about how and whether and to the degree they sideline people like Cruz and Hawley and the 141 members of the House who voted to overturn the election results last week. And so this is a real reckoning for the party itself. And, you know, parties are private organizations like everybody else, and they have to scrap it out for themselves.
Yeah, and some people have suggested that Mitch McConnell's comments that he's open to the possibility of voting to convict President Trump when the trial takes place in the Senate is motivated significantly by his desire to be gone, be done with Trump. This might be a convenient way for him to say, well, he can't be elected president again. And so we need to put our faith in different leaders. But as you point out, will the flavor be the same?
Well, you know, and the challenge for political parties in the United States is that they are not party organizations so much as they are candidate-driven organizations where candidates might share a party label. And so the governing board of the Republican National Committee is not nearly as powerful as is any individual candidate who might want to seek power in the party or the nomination for president in 2024. And, you know, President Trump has shown us that party leaders can't stop people they don't want in the party. And that's where the Republican Party is now. They sold their soul, and now they have to decide if they're going to fight for it back.
Kathy, what are your students saying about all of this?
My students are having any range of reactions from, you know, jaws dropped to, you know, just questions as much as anything else. You know, I mean, I think in the fall, I taught an introduction to American government class that was about 150 students, about half of whom were first year students to the university. So, you know, the typical 18, 19 year olds. And again, you know, many of them were coming to politics for the first time. So lots of questions, you know, what is happening and how does it happen and why? And, you know, as is any system, our system is designed in a particular way. So helping people understand how the system is operating and why things are happening the way they are, I think goes a long way to helping people then try to figure out what they're seeing and how it all makes sense. But I think, you know, they are as amazed as the rest of us.
Did you get a sense that we need to do more in terms of teaching government, teaching civics at an earlier age before they show up in your class here at a university?
Yes. So I will say that I have long argued that every student at a university should take, an American government class because they are, you know, consumers of our system. But yes, I do think we miss a lot of opportunity in the K-12 system to expose students to civic education in a way that helps create active citizens when they are adults.
Kathy, thank you so much for a fascinating conversation. Could have you on for hours talking about this, but it certainly looks over the next week like there will be material for hours of conversations and important conversations as we take a look at the future of where our democracy is going. Thanks for joining us.
Sure. Thank you.
Kathy Dolan, Distinguished Professor of Political Science at UWM, our guest on this edition of UWM Today. That's all for this week's program. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week at the same time. I'm Tom Luchak.
You've been listening to UWM Today with host Tom Luchak, the weekly program where you get to meet the people behind one of America's top research universities, University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Playing a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin, UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Learn more at uwm.edu.